excellent day for an exorcism.
I understand, all right. You're one of the undead, and I'm a werewolf.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
Hey, Nancy. No running in the hallway.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Horror Crypt Podcast, episode number 84. Now, before I get started, I would just want to give you a bit of a heads up. Now, we are at number 84, so we're getting close to number 100. Now, I'm going to put it out there to everyone. Let's see if you can guess what movie number 100 is going to be. Now, if you guess correctly, I promise you, and I will not, you know, shortchange you in any way, if you guess the correct movie that I'm going to be doing, I will send you a Horror Crypt Podcast hat, and I will sign it on the underside of the hat to say that you got the correct guess, and this is number 100 podcast episode. So give it a thought. You can follow me, as I said, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and you can also send me a direct message, horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. That's probably the best one to send your guesses to. So if you want to guess which movie is going to be number 100, remember today is number 84, then you just send me a message at horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. And if you guess correctly, you get your very own podcast hat for free. I reckon that's a pretty good deal. It really is. And I'll not shortchange you. If you don't guess it, I'll let you know. But if you do guess it, I will read your answer out. You'll read your name out, and you will get a Horror Crypt podcast hat. Now, in saying all that, I am going to be doing a movie today, which it is so well known in the horror community. This movie is by far probably the one of the most well-documented hauntings in all of history. Now, when I say all of history, I think that's a bit overstating it. It's one of the most well-documented haunting cases in the world. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, I've got an idea of which one this is. Okay, before you get excited about this movie, it is so inaccurate, it should be a standalone movie. They've used the name of the town, but everything else in the movie is completely false, inaccurate, incorrect. And I'll tell you exactly why it's all been incorrectly done after we listen to the trailer.
Houses here are way out of our price range. When the business is good, we are going to have the greatest house.
It's beautiful. This is an amazing house. You are going to love it.
Holy. This is the deal of a lifetime. So, what's the catch?
There was a crime, a murder.
In the house?
Several people, a family.
The accused claims he heard voices coming from within the house.
Well, houses don't kill people. To a perfect house and to a perfect family.
Who are you talking to?
The girl who lives in my closet.
And what's her name?
Jody.
What's the matter?
Just seeing things, I guess. Why don't you come back to bed?
I can't sleep.
There was a family, lived here some time ago. They had a similar problem.
I'm living in their house. We need to get out of here. Just pack up and go.
Everything we have is in this house.
It's okay, Mommy. Jody won't hurt you. But the man who lives here, he says he's bad.
So by now you're trying to probably work out what the hell is this movie we're reviewing? Well, this is the remake of the Amityville Horror. This is the 2005 Ryan Reynolds one, the Amityville Horror. Now, As I said, this movie is very much a standalone. Don't expect it. If you've seen the original 1979 Amityville Horror, that one is way scarier, way more accurate. Really, it's more accurate than anything I've seen. Now, we all know the story of the Amityville Horror. We all know about the way the house looked. We know about the family. We know about the original family. We know about what happened with the Lutzes and things like that. So this movie should have been pretty much on par with what we were actually expecting. Well, this one is completely the wrong way around. So I'm just going to read you a little bit of information. So there is a goof, and this is around 7 minutes of the movie. The actual address of the house when the Lutz family first moved in was 112 Ocean Avenue. When George and Kathleen visit the house for the first time, the address is 412 Ocean Avenue. This is because not only is this movie here, not meant to be historically accurate in any way, but for legal reasons, they were unable to use the house's original address. Why? I do not know. Because it just doesn't make any sense. For the same reasons, the children's names have been changed from the original Lutz family names. So really, it's all over the place as far as this movie goes. And I was really quite upset about this movie, because when I first saw this, I'm like, oh, okay, this is going to be the remake, and it's, you know, we've been waiting so long to see the remake, and they did this movie, and I'm like, why have you screwed up a movie that was already good? Leave 1979 alone. That is a kind of movie that will make you crap your decks. But for some reason, they decided, no, we need to updo this and do a 2005 version where the house is wrong. The placement of the staircase is wrong. The way that the executions happen in the house is wrong. I mean, okay, for instance, you know, we all know that the children were all executed in their beds. We all know that the mother, Mrs. DeFeo, was the only one shot in the head. Well, in this movie, all the children are not executed in the beds, because one of the little girls by the name of Jodie, which Jodie was not one of the little girls in the house, it was actually Missy, but one of the little girls is the name Jodie. She is actually shot in the closet in the head. That didn't happen at all. The way that the house is done with a huge wraparound porch, that's inaccurate. The boat shed is inaccurate. The way that everything is done in this house is inaccurate. Even down to the point of where they actually get a priest in to bless the house is inaccurate, because it happened in this movie, it happened like at day 20. We all know that when Kathy and George first got into the house, they had it blessed within the first 7 days of the house. And this is why the priest said to them, do not use that bedroom or that room at the top of the stairs, or not the first floor of the house to the right hand side, which was the sewing room. Do not go into that room and do not use that bedroom in any way. There's something wrong in that room. That's where the priest was slapped. That's where the priest was told to get out of the house by a very demonic sounding voice. So really, in all honesty, this whole movie is a standalone movie. It's been named the Amityville Horror, but for absolutely no other reason as to the way the house looked, the way everything is depicted, no. So if you're going to sit and watch this movie, please don't go into this movie thinking that you are going to be watching the 1979 version with a updated, you know, remake. It's not. It's so all over the place. It was really quite upsetting, and I was still to this day, you know, really annoyed about the way they did this this whole thing. A bit of trivia for you. Ryan Reynolds, who plays George Lutz, chose not to become close with his on-screen children. And I think this is a great idea. He was not meant to be rude or mean to them in any way, just very distant. So distant, in fact, that the children often confided to those on set that said, Ryan doesn't like us. Reynolds said that he did not want to fall in love with the kids. He did this so when George Lutz starts changing, he would have no trouble easing into the verbal and physical abuse. That's a really great way they did this for the movie. But yeah, there's a lot of inaccuracies in this movie. Even with regards to the last part of the movie, it's so inaccurate. Even down to the dog, it's inaccurate. So please don't think, and I guess this is why they said, you know, it's not meant to be historically accurate in any way. So in all honesty, this movie, The Amityville Horror, is a standalone movie. Don't go into it remembering the 79 version, because you are so far away from it, it's not funny. But, you know, in saying that, I guess it filled in, you know, an hour 40 of my life. But other than that, it's one of those movies that I've seen it maybe 3 times, and I don't need to go back and see it again. So, you know, if you want to, by all means, go and watch it, but just don't expect too much. So the movie opens up where we basically see a young guy sitting on a bed in downstairs in a basement sort of area, and in a basement, for God's sakes, he's sitting on the bed in the basement, and he's got a TV going. It's an older style TV, and it's an end of the day transmission, but this has got a lot of, you know, Native American symbols on it, and you can hear this voice saying "catch him," and then you can't hear exactly what it is that he's supposed to be doing, or what the other part of the word is supposed to be. So we've got really no idea about what's going on, but you can actually see that he's loading a rifle that he's got on his lap, and he's, you know, looking very, I don't know, almost catatonically, you know, transfixed. And he starts to walk upstairs, and he's basically going now from room to room, shooting his family. Now, as we know in the story, the only one that was shot in the head was the mother. So we see the first gunshot that is, you know, into her head. The father gets it in the back, and you see a crime scene photograph. It's a doctored crime scene photograph because they didn't actually show you the real one. Then you see him go into another bedroom. He pulls the cover over a young person's head. We don't know whether it's a boy or a girl. You hear two gunshots, and then you see the photographs of two separate beds because obviously these two children are sharing the same bedroom, and they're killed. You see another segment where he walks up the stairs. He shoots another person, a young woman in the back, and she's dead. As this is going on, we hear, where should we see, a little girl get very startled, sits up in bed, and goes and hides in her closet. Now, this is the first bit of bullshit, because there was never anyone in the closet, and this is what I get so frustrated and so angry about with these remake of movies. This movie is supposed to be sort of accurate. Now, I know that there was some situation that was going on, that there was action with suing and counteraction and things like that, as far as this is not supposed to be, you know, historically accurate. But if you're going to be making a movie, if you're going to be doing a remake of a movie, come on. I mean, at least try and get the story correct. Now, if you were if you didn't think it was going to work, go to the people that were involved. Now, obviously, we know that George and Kathy Lutz still had the rights to 112 Ocean Avenue. So at least go to them, sit down. I mean, obviously, Kathy had passed away, so George was still alive. You know, go and sit down with him and say, you know, this is what we want to do. We want to do a remake of the Amityville Horror. It's going to be starring this person and this person. What are your thoughts? Can we use 112 Ocean Avenue? Can we use the look of the house? Can we use basically what had actually happened with the DeFeo family? I mean, that sort of situation is what you'd really like them to do. But because this is so all over the place as far as the movie goes, it just didn't work. And that's what I really get upset about with this movie. But we basically see this young girl, and she's crouching, this little girl, she's crouching in a closet. And we're watching, you know, this guy walking up the stairs, and he goes into her bedroom, and of course she's not in the bed, but he turns to the closet, and he can see that there's a light underneath the closet.
What's wrong, Ronnie?
I love you, Jody.
Family were found last night in bed, shot and killed.
Killed were car dealer Ronald DeFeo, his wife, and four of their children. The sole survivor of the family, 23-year-old Ronald Butch DeFeo Jr., is said to have discovered the bodies. Police state that for his own safety, they're holding him in protective custody.
Five of the victims were found shot face down on their beds. A sixth was found in a closet. In their sleep. Strange.
Suffolk County police have charged 23-year-old Ronald DeFeo Jr. The accused told police he heard voices coming from within the house telling him to murder his family.
So 1 year later, we see there's a married couple, George and Kathy Lutz. They're looking around for houses, because it starts off at Deer Park, and that's where they actually were originally from, and they're looking for houses that could possibly suit their needs as far as a growing family. And you know, George is cooking, you know, the children breakfast, and they're really not very interested in having breakfast. The young guy or the kid, I don't know what his name, Michael. He's got a really cool t-shirt. He's got a Kiss t-shirt on. So two thumbs up on the great t-shirts of this movie. But anyway, they're basically having breakfast, and we find out that this is the children from Kathy's previous marriage. And so it's now that the kids are going to school, and Kathy and George now are going to go house hunting, and they see that there is a house in Amityville, Long Island. Now, this is the very first time we actually get to see the house, and anyone who knows the house would sit there and go, what the hell is this pig trollop? It looks nothing like the original house. We've got the little, you know, eyes, you know, that are in the very top of the house. But other than that, we don't get to see anything that looks remotely like the original house, except for the little sign that's hanging there that's saying High Hopes. And that was originally something that the DeFeo family put up there. And George actually thought it was actually quite nice to keep it up there. And it was basically the high hopes that the family had to move in the very affluent neighborhood of Amityville, Long Island. If anyone actually is from Amityville, Long Island, that's listening to this podcast, send me an email, horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. Tell me if you've ever gone past the house, the original house, I should say. I do know that the original house now has had the windows on the top of the house changed, so it doesn't have those crescent-shaped eyes that we all say that looks like the eyes of the house. They've actually changed it to square windows up on the top, so that we don't have the eyes anymore. But yeah, if anyone's actually listening from Amityville, yeah, send me a message. Well, anyone that's actually has been to the house, I should say, send me a message. See, you know, tell me what it was all about. Why you went there? It would be great to find out. So anyway, George and Kathy get out of their husband's van, and they're basically looking over the house, and the real estate agent is there, you know, letting them through the house. And of course, as far as disclosure goes, real estate agents have a duty to actually disclose if there's been anything untoward in the house. We find out that there has been a murder in the house, and unfortunately, it's the fact that the entire family, other than one person, was killed inside the house. And once again, we see that the same thing as the original, you know, George goes, well, you know, houses don't kill people, you know, people kill people. But it really comes down to, you know, George saying to Kathy, do you want it? And she's like, I'd love to live here. And of course, it's like, yep, okay. And see, the thing is, like, in the original movie, if you remember, you know, they were taken up the stairs, and they would open up the first door, and you'd see, you know, a flashback to what actually happened in that room. Well, this is really nothing like that at all, and this is why I find it very hard to talk about this movie, because it's just so all over the place. You know, I mean, the boathouse doesn't look anything like it. It just, there's a huge wraparound porch, and there was no wraparound porch in the house, but I guess we just have to take this with a grain of salt, unfortunately. This is, as I said, this is 89 minutes of your life you're never going to get back again. But there is two really good jump scares in this movie. Other than that, there's really nothing much to this movie, because it's all historically inaccurate. But anyway, we've got George and Kathy, and they're talking about the house, and George basically says to Kathy, okay, yep, you know, we can get it. And then we have moving day, where everyone is moving stuff into the house, and shortly after they are all settled in the house, they start to experience paranormal events. Now, Kathy always used to say that the most comforting place in the house was the kitchen. So, unfortunately, this movie doesn't portray that in that sort of situation. We also see that there are door handles in the house that have got crosses on them. Nope, that didn't happen either. The layout of the stairs is inaccurate as well. So, it's all really tongue-in-cheek sort of situation. Don't look at this movie too directly to try and find faults, because you'll be picking faults for the entire movie. But anyway, they start to experience some paranormal events in the house. And Chelsea, the little girl, claims that she's befriended a girl named Jody. That's wrong as well. Jody was not the little girl. It was Missy, that was actually one of the DeFeo children. And Jody was the supposed image that the family, or the Lutz family's little daughter, used to see, and it was in the shape of a pig. It was not of a child, so that's another inaccurate as well. But anyway, She claims that she's befriended this girl named Jody, who was one of the children in the DeFeo family. Okay, all right, fair enough. One night, the couple, George and Kathy, decide that, you know, they want to go out, you know, because they've been in the house for a while. We don't really know exactly how long it, because it doesn't go day one, day two, day three. It doesn't build up. This movie sort of like goes, you know, moving day is, you know, the very first day, and then, oh, we're at day, you know, 10. And it's like, okay, so we don't know what's happened between 0 and 10. All we know is that suddenly things are starting to be a little bit chaotic, a little bit hectic and stuff like that. So anyway, one night, you know, George and Kathy decide they need to go out for dinner, just try to get away from the house, and they call a babysitter. And my God, this girl, this babysitter by the name of Lisa, oh my God. Okay, you don't, I'm not trying to be old, for the love of God, I'm not trying to be old, but you don't turn up to your job the way that she looks. Although as a man, thank God she turned up looking like this. She looks hot as. But anyway, she basically says that, you know, she comes to the house and of course, you know, George and Kathy are like, okay, would you like us to show you the layout of the house? And she's like, no, it's not necessary. I used to babysit the DeFeo children. They're like, oh, okay. And, you know, it's like, okay, no problems. And Lisa tells them about the murders that took place in the house. And it's like, yeah, we know that. Thanks very much. You don't have to tell the children, don't tell in front of the children about it. Anyway, they go off for a meal, and of course, Lisa, I really don't know whether Lisa is coming on to the young boy by the name of Michael. He would probably be, I don't know, I'm very bad with ages, maybe 12 to 15, maybe 12 to 14, something like that. And the babysitter is like, I'd say the way that she looks, like 25. So really, if you're about to do what we were thinking you were going to do, I think the word statutory rape is probably in your vocabulary, and prison sentence follows pretty soon after that. But anyway, she's laying on Michael's bed very seductively, I might add. And Michael has got, you know, once again, he's got his Kiss t-shirt on and some Kiss posters in the bedroom, looking awesome as far as I'm concerned. And she's telling them about the fact that there was this murder that happened in the house, and really starts to freak the children out. You know, you've got Michael, and you've got Chelsea, and you've got Billy. Billy's the little boy. And he's sort of like starting to get very, very frightened and very, very nervous about what's going on, about what this babysitter is saying. And they start to play a little bit of a game where she says, she goes into Chelsea's room, and Chelsea says to her that the fact is that you're a bad babysitter. And she's like, and of course Lisa's like, oh, really? And she goes, yeah, because Jody told me you're a bad babysitter. And she goes, oh, Jody, that little bitch got me fired. And it's like, oh, and it's almost like, and of course, this is when Chelsea goes, you shouldn't have said that. You know, Jody doesn't like you at all. And she's like, I care. She's dead. I'm alive. I don't give a fuck, you know, sort of situation. And then they start to, and see, this is the whole thing. I don't even understand why they do this, but they have this little game where, Michael basically says, I dare you to go into, oh, that's right, because she says that where they found Jody was in the closet, which was in Chelsea's closet, which was not true at all. But anyway, in this movie, we'll go with the fact that it happened. So Chelsea has said, well, you know, yes, she was found in the closet, and, you know, Jody doesn't like you. And this is when Michael says, well, I dare you to go into the closet. And she's like, well, and of course Lisa's like, no, I'm not going to go in the closet. And Michael's like, oh, okay. And she goes, oh, okay, fair enough. I'll go into the closet, you know, just to dare, you know, you're daring me to do it, I'll do it. So she goes in the closet, shuts the door. And then it's at this stage that she then hears, Lisa hears this voice from behind her, and she turns around and sees Jody. And Jody's standing there with a bullet hole in her head, saying, look what Ronnie did, Lisa, and I'll show you, and grabs her hand and pushes her finger into the bullet hole in her head. And this is when Lisa absolutely screams, trying to get out of the closet. Of course, everyone just scatters out of the room. Chelsea goes, Michael goes, Billy goes, and poor old Lisa is stuck inside the closet with Jody basically, you know, terrifying her. And she's seeing flashbacks of Jody laying there. There's blood in the closet and stuff like that. It's at that stage that Kathy and George arrive home from the restaurant, and of course they're hearing the screaming and banging on the door. Of course they run upstairs and they actually find that poor old Lisa is locked in the closet. Now, in the original movie, and I don't want to keep harping back to the original movie, but the original movie was that the babysitter was going to get some clothes out, or the pajamas out of the closet for the daughter, and that's when the door shut and the lights went out and she was terrified, and that sort of situation was happening. Way more terrifying than this. It's of course this stage that they managed to bring Lisa out of their closet, and Lisa doesn't mention anything about the fact that the door was locked and she couldn't get out. All that Lisa tells Kathy is that she's seen Jody and that she's not dead. She's in the closet. She's not dead. And she's hysterical. And it's like, okay. So, and this is the whole thing. It's like, okay, that scene happened. Let's move on to the next scene. Nothing really is going on at all. George's behavior towards Kathy and her children become abusive, and the paranormal activity continues. George was always obsessed with keeping the fire going in the house. He always used to claim that he could never get warm enough in the house. And, of course, Kathy would always be like, well, I'm actually very, very warm, thanks. I'm actually not too bad at all. And he's like, I just can't get warm. So he was basically, you know, chopping so much goddamn wood. And even to the point that at one stage that Kathy says to him, you know, in the other movie, my God, George, you could heat the whole of Long Island with the amount of wood that you've got here. You know, and he was just basically so obsessed with keeping the furnace going, keeping the fire going. So one night, George hears Harry barking in the boathouse. Well, Harry was his dog. Now, if we all remember, George was in the military, so getting up at a sparrow fart or being woken in the middle of the night was not a drama at all for him. He was very easy to do that because being part of the military, you had to be on, you know, standby at all times. But he was always awoken at 3:15. Now, we all remember that 3:15 apparently was when all the murders had taken place. So when George and Kathy were in the house, he was always not only plagued with coldness and stuff like that, but he was always waking up at 3:15 in the morning. So Harry, who was didn't ever want to go into the house and stayed outside, was in this movie was barking away. So George goes to see what's going on, and basically as he's walking around the movie sort of like jumps very, very quickly. So we see him going down to the boathouse, no problems at all. There's, you know, the door of the boathouse has been banging backwards and forwards, so there's really nothing there. He checks the boathouse, no worries, goes back into the house. The next scene we see is the following night, 3:15 again, he wakes up. Now, before the next scene happens, we see that the little girl Chelsea has been playing with a red balloon, almost harking back to It. This is, yeah, you almost sit there and go, oh, you're going to see Pennywise in a second. But George wakes up in the night and sees that there is a red balloon that comes out of the boathouse door, and it's at that moment that he assumes that maybe one of the children are down into the boathouse. So he runs down into the boathouse, and he sees that Chelsea is standing on the front of the boat, just almost in a trance. And he comes into the boathouse and manages to snap her out of it, and gets her to come off the boat to safety on the dock. And basically says, you know, what were you doing? And she's like, oh, Jody wanted to see the boat. So it's like, oh, okay, all right. Jody wanted to see the boat. Now you're talking to this imaginary friend, and now she's taking you down to the boat. Okay. So we really now see that George has to make sure that he has got a padlock onto the boat, you know, boat door. A couple of scenes go through where we've seen that there is, you know, words being spelt out. I don't know if anyone remembers how you used to get the magnets that you can put on your fridge that had the alphabet magnets. Well, obviously, you know, we see that Kathy's in the kitchen and she's doing something, and she looks over and sees Ketchum, Killum, and it's like, oh, George walks in and basically distracts Kathy for a moment, and then she goes, did you write that on the refrigerator? And turns around, and all the letters have all been scrambled up, and there's nothing written there. And he's like, what letters? You know, what do you mean? And she's like, oh, don't worry about it. I just thought I saw something. And she's seeing a couple of flashes here and there of someone running around the house. But, you know, there's really no payoff to this whole movie. The next scene we see is a nighttime scene where the little boy, Billy, has to get up to go to the bathroom. Now, Billy is not very confident about getting up by himself and was trying his hardest to get Michael, his brother, to get up out of bed too, to go with him. Obviously, just for security, just for someone to be there, just to make sure that everything's okay. and he tries to wake up Michael, and Michael is not waking up at all, so poor old Billy has to go to the bathroom by himself. Now, this is one of the big jump scares, but when I say big, it's not one of those, oh my God, that was terrifying. It was just one of those, if you can remember Insidious, the jump scare where you've got the thing behind the guy, that's basically what it is with this one. You see Billy and he goes into the bathroom and he takes a whiz, that's fine. And he goes to turn on the faucet to try and actually make the water go, and there's no water coming out at that moment. So he's looking, you know, where the water comes out, this little spout. And of course, as he comes up, we see that there is, I guess, a ghost, a demonic spirit, whatever it is, standing right behind him, looking very evil and menacing. That's the first jump scare. And then, of course, we then see him run back to his bedroom, and that's it. That's all the jump scare it is. That's all that pays off. There's nothing else that goes on. Okay, fair enough. Next scene we see is now 3:15 in the morning. The clock clicks over, 3:15, George is awake. It's at this stage that he looks out and he sees that there is the banging of the boathouse again. And it looks like that the locks come off. So George goes down to the boathouse, as he does, seemingly possessed. He doesn't look like he's just walking down as if to say, oh, I'm just going to go down and check the boathouse. He looks like he's in a trance. But he goes down to the boathouse and he grabs an axe as he proceeds into the boathouse. And he sees that there is something in the water. He can't really see exactly what it is, but he turns around to walk back to the house, and there's this creature, or this thing, we get a flash of, standing right behind him. It's at that stage that he swings the axe, and then he thinks that he's killing this thing, and he's hacking away at this thing. We find out, unfortunately, he murders the family dog, Harry. Just a side note for everyone, it doesn't happen. Harry was never killed. Harry actually escaped the Amityville house with George and Kathy. When they relocated to California, the dog went with them. So Harry is not dead. So don't think that this movie is that they killed the family dog. In the movie, they killed it. In real life, Harry survived and lived a very long to an old age and died of natural causes. So he didn't die in this movie. So the children start to look for Harry the next day, with George denying he knows where he is, despite Billy's suspicions. Now, the whole thing is that, you know, you can see George really starting to, in this movie, he really starts to change. He doesn't have really any interest in food. He doesn't have any interest in his family, even in the kids. I mean, when you first see him, he's very jovial and very happy and a really nice guy to be around. As we start to see him getting more and more, I guess, possessed, you know, because he's seen a couple of things around the house, he starts to becoming very distant with the family. And this is one of the things that Ryan Reynolds did in this movie, is that he started to distance himself from the children in the movie. That way, when it came to action, when they were to say action and start the scene, he would be very easy to slide into the role of being very aggressive and be very abusive. And it was almost to the point that the kids in the movie were actually going to the director saying that Ryan doesn't like us. And it wasn't that at all. It was the fact that he was trying to find this character and try to make sure that it was very authentic. And it really did, it did come off very well, because he really doesn't give a flying fuck about his family at this stage. He's more concerned about chopping wood. He's making sure that the fire's stoked, making sure that the furnace is still going. He doesn't care about his family. Doesn't care about Kathy, the kids, nothing. So the fact that he's gone and killed his dog, Not the kid's dog, it's his dog. You know, it's just basically, you can see that he's just got that nonchalant attitude. But, you know, the kids are very skeptical about the fact that there is something going on. So Kathy goes to the church. Now, this is the whole thing. In the original movie, the priest comes basically on moving day. This priest is coming at about day 18. So it is way too late for anything that's even going to happen. So Father Calloway comes to bless the house as a protective measure to prevent any future paranormal incidents. But Father Calloway flees the house when he encounters such occurrences himself. Now, we all know that he witnessed a whole lot of flies in the sewing room. That's why he told Kathy and George, do not go into that room. There's something wrong in that room. And they said it was only going to be used for a sewing room for Kathy. But in this movie, you can see that he has trouble once again in the room as far as flies. But it's a little bit over the top, a little bit too much CGI with the flies and stuff like that. It just didn't work for me. I'm sorry, it just didn't work. Even to the point where you've got the demonic voice saying, get out. Even that didn't terrify me. It didn't really, it wasn't menacing. Not like the original Get Out, you know. As I said, unfortunately, this movie just didn't make it for me as far as a scary movie goes. Even when I first saw this in 2005, I was sort of like walking out of the cinema going, what the hell did I just see? But anyway, the father, he has some problems in the house, but it doesn't really come off all that well. Kathy discovers that the house once belonged to a cult preacher named Reverend Jeremiah Ketchum, whose evil actions towards Native Americans during his mission in the 17th century Amityville are said to be the cause for the haunting. Now, we know that was partly true and partly not. Now, when the Salem witch trials happened, there were supposed witches, or there were witches, that left Salem and went to Amityville, and they did happen to be on that ground. Then there is conflicting reports that was the site of an ancient Indian burial ground, and when they leveled the area and put the original house on there, that's where the problem started happening. It's been a lot of conjecture, so we don't really know 100% what the truth is. In this movie, we know that there is this Reverend Jeremiah Ketchum. I've never heard of that, and I never heard of that when I was researching, you know, because I've been very interested in the Amityville house for the longest time. I'd never heard anything like that for Ketchum. But once again, this is not historically accurate. So for this movie, we're going to assume that this is true, and there was this guy, Reverend Ketchum, who was very bad towards the Native Americans and built the house there, and this is the reason why there's the haunting. So meanwhile, George, as he's walking through the basement of the house, encounters the apparition of various Native Americans who were tortured and killed there by Ketchum centuries ago. This was very interesting. You see him going towards what we class now as the Red Room down in the basement, and he manages to open one side of the wall and walks into the wall, and you can actually see that there's almost like cells, prison cells in the basement of the house. And you can see that there is, you know, flashbacks that George is seeing where there is one Native American person that's got like this, I wouldn't say this wire basket, but like this basket on his head that is, you know, stopping him from eating. There's another one that's chained to the wall. There's another one that's chained to the floor. So we can see these very bad images of what this person was supposedly doing to these Native Americans. Once again, we know this didn't happen, but we're going to go with it for the sake of this movie. So you can see that these little things, and they're all in dimly lit rooms. It's almost like they'll put into like these basement cellars, these basement prison cells, and that's where they were left. So George encounters Ketchum himself, though he's not aware of who he is. So we see George, we're following him. He goes into this room that's basically in almost like a hexagon sort of room. And there's this little altar in the center of it. And there's this guy, he's a rather tall guy. He's got a long dark jacket on and a widely brimmed dark hat, looking very menacingly at George. You don't see his face, you just see him staring at George. And George has that image of like, oh my God, he's going to do something. So as George is standing there watching, we see this ghostly figure. He turns around, picks up a knife, and slits his throat in an act of recreating his suicide, covering George with blood and causing George to become nearly completely possessed. Okay, for the sake of this movie, we are going to go with the fact that this is happening, but as soon as the spaceship to reality arrives, I'm getting on it and going back to reality, because this movie makes no sense, no reality, and historically, as we say, it's inaccurate. We have taken the left turn to Albuquerque. This is definitely not historically accurate at all. In fact, as I've said in the beginning of this podcast, this is a standalone movie. Wipe away 1979 Amityville. Go with this one. You'll believe everything this movie is telling you, because it is hooey. So Kathy becomes convinced that George's abusive behavior is owed to the spiritual possession. She believes now that he is completely possessed, and this is all happening. And she goes to Father Calloway and says to him, listen, I've got this problem. I live at this address. And he's like, yes, I understand that. I went there. And she's like, yeah, but I think there's something wrong with the house. And he says to her, well, when I went to the house and I was introduced to your children, And it's like, well, hang on a minute, when did this happen? Well, yeah, she, Kathy saw Father Calloway out the front of the house, and he was going to go and bless the house. Now, when Father Calloway was introduced to the children, he notices that Chelsea is holding a stuffed teddy bear, a black stuffed teddy bear. And he basically says to Kathy, well, when I went to the house, when I was introduced to your children, I saw that your daughter Chelsea was holding a black teddy bear. And she's like, yeah, she said, you know, she found it in the house and, you know, she's just been attached to it ever since. And this is when Father Calloway goes, well, this is not possible, Kathy, at all. And she's like, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, the little girl that lived in the house, Jody, that was her teddy bear. And I know that for a fact, because when she was buried, that teddy bear went with Jody. So there is no possible way that your child Chelsea could be holding that little black teddy bear. And she's like, well, this is the teddy bear that she's found in the house. And he goes, it's just not possible. So from basically following the urgent advice from Father Calloway, Kathy tries to evacuate the children from the house and escort them to safety. But the possessed George attempts to kill her and the children. Now, this is an interesting, because, you know, George had seen a couple of flashbacks of him being in Chelsea's room about to kill Chelsea. And, you know, he basically is very, you know, when you see, say you're having a dream and you think you see something, you know, and you're very nervous in your dream. Well, this is the thing. George sees himself in the room about to kill Chelsea. Then, of course, what he sees of himself, he basically turns the shotgun around on himself and shoots and kills him. So basically, we're seeing that George is seeing a lot of things that's going on inside the house. So, you know, at this stage, Kathy goes back to the house, and this is supposedly day 28. So really, this movie is very, very quick. Chronologically, it doesn't make any sense. It's very, very quick from, you know, moving day to day 10 to day 18 to day 28. We're done. Finish. The movie's over. This is how quick it really is. You know, we've had a little couple of jump scares here and there, but really nothing over the top. But, you know, we're seeing this. We also see another bit of a jump scare where, you know, Chelsea's laying in bed at one stage, and George goes into her closet and picks up the black teddy bear to give to Chelsea. And then, of course, on the ceiling, we're seeing that this supposed haunted little girl, Jody, is being held against her will on the top of the ceiling by these unseen hands. So she's basically trapped on the ceiling, and George obviously can't see it. So we go, yep, okay. So Kathy goes back to the house on day supposed 28 to try and get the children out of the house. But of course, George intervenes and tries to kill the family. Kathy goes up onto the roof, and basically tries to evacuate herself and the children that way. They get down on the ground, and of course, George is standing there, almost getting ready to kill the children, where Kathy has now a shotgun. Mm-hmm. She's holding a shotgun against George's, the back of George's head, saying, get away from my children, leave them the fuck alone. It's at that stage that George then turns around, looks at Kathy, and puts the gun directly, or the barrel of the gun directly to his head, as if to say, go ahead, shoot. It's at this stage that Kathy just, she can't bring herself to kill him, obviously, so she turns the gun around and hits the butt of the gun against his head and knocks him out. And basically they start to drag George now down to the boathouse. We see that George is now being loaded onto the boat. Okay, the kids get onto the boat. Kathy starts the boat, and her response to the kids is, we just have to get George as far away from the house as possible. You see the boat start to leave the dock of the boathouse, and she gets further and further out away from the house. The house looks beautiful from where it is in the middle of the water, or in the middle of the lake. We see Kathy going further and further, and as we're going further and further, wow, George is coming around. He's not possessed anymore. He's becoming more coherent. As the title card states at the end of the movie, the family left with 28 days of arriving and never returned. So now we're going back to the house, and we see Jody standing in the foyer. She's holding her little teddy bear, and she's standing there looking very upset about everyone has left the house. And she then lets out this unholy scream. Everything starts moving around. Everything starts rearranging itself back into the position that was before the family arrived. You know, the chairs are going back to the dining room table. The clocks are all spinning backwards to 3:15. And Jody is standing there, you know, very, very upset. You can see she's starting to cry. And as the camera starts pulling away, as if we're going to go through the front door, Jody is subsequently pulled beneath the floor by a pair of disembodied hands. The movie fades to black. And that is the end of Amityville 2005, What a Yawn Fest movie. I'm sorry to say that, but it really is quite a bad... It's just quite a bad movie. It really is. A couple of the interesting scenarios with this movie. Although the film is set on Long Island, it was shot in Chicago. And it was also shot in Salem and Silver Lake, Wisconsin. The house which was used is real. It's an 1800s home that was temporarily converted to add the famous quarter moon eye windows. Okay, that's cool. The house is in Salem at 27618 Silver Lake Road. The movie's facade cost $60,000 to add to this house. Now, I don't know why they just didn't go to Hollywood and rebuild the house on a set. I don't know. It just, yeah, whatever. I'm over this movie anyway. So after the movie wrapped up and was all done, the production was all finished, the facade remained on the house for a while and was eventually carefully removed. The famous quarter moon evil eye windows were preserved in sections of the wall which still have the movie bedroom wallpaper on the inside and siding with the old looking movie paint on the outside. The windows were in good shape but were aged to match the house using peeling paint. In 2017, an estate sale was held at the movie mansion in the famous quarter moon eye windows, which had been in the attic since filming, was sold. The buyer lives in the same neighborhood and has the windows on display. So if anyone's around that area, you can actually go and see the actual thing. Now, MGM claimed that the remake was based on new information uncovered during research of the original events, but George Lutz later claimed nobody ever spoke to him or his family about the project. This is why I said to you, it would have been good if they had have gone to George and said, and sit down and say, this is what we're going to do. We need the information. And it would be like, listen, there is nothing new that I can tell you. This all happened, this all happened, and this all happened. And it would be like, okay, but can we sort of like integrate this and that? And maybe it would have been a thousand times better than the 2005 shit fest that they actually made this movie. So when he initially heard about it was underway, his attorney contacted the studio to find out where they had in the planning stage and to express Lutz's belief they didn't have the right to proceed without his input. And this is where, because he held on to the rights of the Amityville Horror, he made sure that he had the rights to, you know, everything, all the information, because it was basically his story. Now, a lot of people believe that it was a made-up story, that this never happened. And when you look at it in realistic terms, okay, you've got the house that was supposedly 28 days after they moved in, they fled in terror, they never went back to the house. Then you had the Warrens that went to the house and they experienced what they experienced. But you've had owners and you've had people living in the house ever since, up to this very recording right now. They still got people living in that house with no dramas whatsoever. So a lot of people believe that maybe George and Kathy got in over their head financially, and maybe it was that situation that they decided that they'd pull up stumps and not worry about it and maybe make this whole fanciful story. But then you've also got the documented, you know, conversation they had with one of the children, one of the Lutz children, who actually lived inside the house, obviously with the family, and had the experiences, and he collaborated everything that was going on in the house. So what are you to believe? I don't know. I believe that there was something in the house. I have never been shown differently. Who knows? But they're saying that this whole situation was that George was supposed to get some input before the planning stages of this movie went ahead. Apparently, three letters were sent and none of them acknowledged. And in June 2004, the studio filed a motion for declaratory relief in federal court, insisting they had the right to do a remake. Okay, and Lutz countersued, citing violations of the original contract that he had continued throughout the years following the release of the first film. Because he never said at the end of the first film, okay, that's my story, it's done. Here, the studio, you can have all the rights. He was very smart. He kept the rights because he wanted to make sure that anything that was going to be told, you know, in a movie form had to be true to the words of what he and Kathy went through. So very, very smart with this situation of him, you know, keeping the rights to it. Unfortunately, the case remained unresolved because George Lutz died in May 2006. So really, that was the end of that situation where they couldn't really get anything resolved. And what we come out with is the 2005 Amityville Horror shit show, as they say. But anyway, that was as much as I could find on this movie. Before we go, we have to do Paul's Fun Facts. So luckily this week we don't have a huge amount of fun facts, which is very, very good, because I wouldn't read all of them as it is anyway. But apparently Ryan Reynolds chose not to become close with his on-screen children. He was not mean or rude to them, just very distant. So distant, in fact, that the children often confided to those on the set that Ryan doesn't like us. Reynolds said that he did not want to fall in love with the kids. He did this so when George Lutz started changing, he would have no trouble easing into the verbal and physical abuse. And I think that's really great. But I don't think that George, the actual George, went that far with the physical abuse. I know he was verbal and very distant with the children, but I don't think he was physically abusive. Apparently, just before shooting began, the body of a fisherman who had been murdered washed up on the bank of the river right near the main house. I mean, of all the luck. I mean, we all hear the stories of the movie Poltergeist, where there were so many dramas going on there, or the fact, you know, you've got so many problems on the set of The Exorcist. So now we've got this situation going on. So I was like, okay, main house, this is the house, and we've got a murdered body. Fantastic. So when you talk about eerie things that start happening, so during the filming, many cast and crew members began waking up at 3:15 a.m., the same time that Ronald DeFeo murdered his family. Ooh, scary, scary. Are we scared yet? That's a rather an interesting thing, waking up at 3:15, the exact time. Ooh, scary, scary. Just a couple more to finish off this podcast. So apparently this movie was not screened for the critics. Oh, really? Like, I wonder why they didn't do that, because I'm sure the critics would be sitting there going, that's wrong, this is wrong, that didn't happen, this didn't happen. So they should have really maybe thought about doing that, and maybe the critics might have gone, yeah, you need to change this, 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 and then you might have a good movie. And just one final one. So while the original address of the Amityville New York house is 112 Ocean Avenue, as we all know, it was changed by subsequent owners to another number in an attempt to stave off tourists. How can you possibly do that? Because everyone knows the look of the goddamn house. So changing a number is not going to actually stave off anybody from going to the house, for the love of God. So in the movie, its address is listed as 412 Ocean Avenue. The numbers on the actual street only go up to 399. But really, in all honesty, how could you sit there and go, okay, this house is not 112 Ocean Avenue, it's 114 Ocean Avenue. We can hide from the tourists, they'll never see the house. Come on, give me a break. Like, really? I'd love to speak to some of these owners and go, what were you thinking? Do you really think that a person or a tourist like myself would sit there and go, I can't find the house because this house looks really, it looks like the house, but it's actually 114 Ocean Avenue. So it's like, come on, give me a break. So anyway, yeah. That's basically a couple of the fun facts of this movie. Now, before we go, I just want to speak to you about a new horror group that I've actually got on Facebook. Now, I know that there's not a lot of people that actually are following me on Facebook, and I don't understand why, because I've got a whole lot of people that listen to this podcast. Maybe it's not your thing that you don't want to follow somebody on Facebook, but if you want to do something even better, you can come to the Facebook group. Now, the group is called, funny enough, Horror Crypt Cafe, and this is where you can actually come hang out. You can actually post stuff that you enjoy, that you actually, as far as movies go, you can get to know people in the group. You can get to know me. You can get to know, you know, other people that listen to the podcast. This is basically a place where we can come hang out, enjoy, just relax, and just, you know, as I said, you can post comments. You can post, you know, pictures of movies that you like. You know, anything that you'd like to do, obviously within reason, because I'm the moderator, so I will say yes or no to everything, you can do. And this is a great place that we can come as a community and talk to each other and get to know each other, because there is a huge group of people, as I said, who listen to this podcast, who love listening to it every week, who come back religiously. And I'm so thankful to all of you for doing that, because I really didn't think this podcast would ever take off to the level that it is right now. So look, if you want to come and follow me in this group, don't have to follow me. You can come to the group. I run the group. It is called Horror Crypt Cafe. So just come onto Facebook. You don't have to go to Twitter or Instagram, even though I've got those two. I've also got the direct email, obviously, horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. But you don't even have to do that. You can just come to the Horror Crypt Cafe, ask to join the group, and you can go from there. Also, just one final one before I finish up this podcast. Number 100, obviously episode 100 is coming up. And I did put out to everyone that, you know, if you guess the movie correctly, I will send you a Horror Crypt baseball cap. Now, it's subsequently changed. Number 100 is a double episode. Now, when I say double episode, it is a part one and part two of a movie in one episode. So what you have to do is you have to think to yourself, what movies has there been that Paul would do of a part one and a part two? It's not part one, two, three, four, five. It is only part one, part two. So if you just narrow that down, there is the movie and then the sequel. That's what I'm going to be doing on number 100. So if you can guess that, send me a direct message, horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. And if you guess it correctly, I will read out your answer and you will get a very own Horror Crypt baseball cap. But that's something for you to think about. But as I said, come to the Horror Crypt Cafe. That's a new Facebook group that I'm running, and we can get to know each other there. Anyway, thank you very much once again for coming to visit me at the Horror Crypt podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Next week, we've got another awesome episode coming up. I hope it's going to be better than this one. It should be. So in saying that, all I will say is thank you very much once again, and I'll creep you later.